Today is February the 15th, 1979, and this is Virginia J. Oliver interviewing Clifford Paul Rowland. Because of health problems on the part of both Brother Rowland and his wife, we have had to delay this interview until now. However, we are happy that Brother Rowland is able to resume his work again. So we shall now take up where we left off some time ago. Also, because Brother Robert L. Witt was appointed to work with Brother Rowland during this particular period of his work at Freed Hartman College, he has requested that Brother Witt also have a part in this part of the interview. Good morning, Brother Rowland.
Good morning, Sister Oliver.
Good morning, Brother Witt. Good morning. Brother Rowland, we shall now continue with your years at Freed Hartman College.
I'm very happy this morning to be in this atmosphere and have the setup to continue some brief statements in regard to the development of Freed Hartman College, with which I've been connected now for more than 55 years. And also to have these brethren present, since Brother Witt and I, much of this time, have known each other and worked together through a number of different crises and through the development of the better years also, and have had a fine association in all this work. As I recall, without having had the opportunity to refresh my mind on these things, we had come up very well to the year 1940. Later, I may have some details back there that I find that I would like to get into this series and thus give a little more attention to some particular points in gaps, kind of, in that particular part. But today, I had thought and made a little preparation on the decade beginning 1940 with a background of it, which I shall practically omit due to time and later complete, and start really with the end of the decade, 1950, which is a very important date in the history of Freed Hartman College due to the fact that there were some incidents that occurred that led the part of the faculty and some of the students to dislike the administration, the closing years of Brother N.D. Hartman here, and thus it developed, which a few points we shall review today that we think that'll be correct and vital to the history of Freed Hartman College in the future in particular, that led up to the crisis that came in the early part of 1950, and which we think was solved real well by all of us together in the Board of Directors eventually, with their authority putting their stamp upon a certain plan to continue. So I'm going to start really at that point with just two or three statements of conditions prior to there which led up to it. And that is that for something like five or more years before we came up to 1950, Brother Hartman, realizing that he was reaching a period that he considered that he should plan to have someone to take his place to be the next president of the college, that he had mentioned that to different ones of us and had really been making some appointments that related to it. We had had some student disturbances due to the kind of discipline and the spirit and publicity given to incidents in the college prior to 1950 that the students did not appreciate, and that the number of members of the faculty, of course, would naturally could not go along with conscientiously. He appointed a board, which is not an official board approved by the Board of Directors, but rather one of his own choosing through years of service, five of us, as I now recall, kind of as an advisory board through that period, and he kept saying a number of times, I'm now reaching retirement age, which he had become 75 about that date, and I realize that that I need to get out of the work and so on like that, expressions that time. So he appointed And that board, as I now recall, consisted of myself, because I was dean at the time and had worked very close to Brother Hardeman in a number of different ways, and Jim Cope, who was brought in also related to the idea that I've just mentioned, to be a member of the faculty and get acquainted personally in the school, and a very fine young preacher and teacher and so on. 5 years before that time, Brother Cope had come here to work with us with the idea that he might be the suitable man when the board went to choose a successor to Brother N.D. Hardeman. And so Brother Jim Cope was on the board. I was on this advisory group that felt free to carry anything from the student body to Brother Hardeman, a kind of go-between in that sense, present their views more, since we didn't have official student government and an organization of the students to do that. And Mrs. Powers, Darnell Hardeman Powers, Brother Hardeman's daughter, who had been many years in the head of the English department, and Brother J.T. Rivenbark, who was dean of men in the Paul Gray Hall, and I believe that gets the number. Name the other Brother Witt,
Brother Hall.
Yes, thanks. Appreciate it. That's one reason I wanted Brother Witt here this morning, because back that far without too complete a set of notes and time also a little bit, my memory's not as accurate as it was 50, 60 years ago. So I appreciate that, Brother Witt. I wanted you to be present to supplement and to ask questions or comment and so on, as you would. But anyway, he had done that. Well, that worked off well under two or three different things that arose, and the recommendations made, and we even, this board, even had the students at one particular time, about 1946 or 7, to draw up a set of grievances, you might say, and present it to the board, and let us then consider it and present it to Brother Hardeman. And so he gave us considerable leeway there for a little while, but as time went on, he kind of fell back into his former attitudes and habits and so on like that. And kindly, some of the recommendations the board, which had been put into effect and so on, he just didn't pay too much attention till what happened in 1950, which I'm going to read a brief statement on that. And this brief statement is one that I've read a number of times recently in connection with the three statements that were made just prior to the final meeting of the board after the crisis had largely run its way, by Brother W. Claude Hall, who was chairman of the district committee at that time, and Brother Witt and myself, due to our connections and Brother Witt's particular value in the early parts of this crisis, in which he assumed some, didn't assume particularly, except he was invited in on the things and had the ability and relationship to the student body that he had developed over the 7 years that he had been working here with us, because I was connected with the employment and with the consideration of all the men during that period. In fact, part of the time I was listed as vice president of the college, and I filled that position a number of years when we brought others here. And Brother Hardeman was only on the campus about 3 or 4 hours a day there for something like 10 years. And so during that particular time, part of the time I was listed as vice president in the catalog. But most of the time, I just served it out of the dean's office, dean's position, as the new things came along. So choosing Brother Witt for his work in the church and his interest in the college as an alumnus of it in 1943. And so he had 7 years connection with us, this tennis and other particular things of that kind. So three of us. Then, after it had pretty well run its course and its history made, then for the final meeting of the board that we thought would be the final one to make a definite arrangement, officially, drew up a brief historical statement. I've read Brother Witt's statement, and I've reread mine. But I think Brother Hall's covers it real well, and since Brother Witt is present and Brother Woodson's present, then either of them could ask any questions in regard to this statement of Brother W.C. Hall, who was chairman of the discipline committee at that time and was called in on what started the final act of the trouble, as I have already anticipated in one sense. and we'll develop it a little bit more later in covering the entire period of 1940 to 1950, that conditions were growing such that Brother Hardeman's methods and his spirit in the work and his aid and everything together, all that together set up a stage kind of, and it only took something like striking a match to fire it and get it aflame. And so that's exactly what happened according to my best judgment and experience and meditation and prayer and everything else connected with it. So this is Brother W. Claude Hall's statement, which is briefer than either Wine or Brother Witch, and I think through it we can get as much entrance and as much statement of fact and so on as we could if I read the other two. Here is his statement delivered to the Board of Directors prior to their final meeting in which they resolved the matter. The first public precipitation came when Brother Hardeman read two letters before the chapel Friday, February 17, that would be 1950, without the consent of the Discipline Committee. These letters should never have been made public. And I'll stop along in the reading of this to comment on a few things, like what had happened up to that time, that Brother Hall makes the statement, this is the first public, you see, throughout the chapel, and so on. Now, two or three briefly stated preliminaries to that were that there had been some rumors in the Paul Gray Hall regarding some of the conduct of Sister Foy, Brother Hardeman's daughter, in her skating with some of the men students, and
how that there was one in particular.
Yeah, okay. All right, one in particular. I do not think probably we need to call any names in this, but one in particular. I'm glad to have that comment with, and so on. And so that got a stir in the Paul Gray Hall, and the supervisor of it, Sister Hamilton, at that time, told the boys that they were wrong. They were making some wrong statements in regard to Karen Eel, which we also told them and cleared their thinking correct on that part of it. And so they said to her, in defending themselves doubtless, well, we have a letter that we think that you ought to know about, and maybe others of the management of the college and so on. And so they produced a letter from this boy who had been the outstanding one in the skating activity at that time, telling of some conduct that would be questionable. And she told them then to present that letter to the Discipline Committee or to me. And so they brought it to our home that evening about dark and handed it to me. Well, I read it and I saw it was a thing that had a lot of power from harm in it and so forth. And so I called Brother Hall at the time, asked him to come over, told him I had a letter from two of the boys down at the Paul Gray Hall, and I'd like for him to come over and like for us to read it together. And he came and we read it. And I said, now what suggestion you have? And he said, well, I think we, now that we have on the Discipline Committee one who is also a member of the family and an official other positions in the college, that probably we should call her Miss Powers and let her see this letter and read it. And so I, although not agreeing 100% with the suggestion at that particular time, but since Brother Hall was the chairman of the Discipline Committee and had the great respect of the student body and all years of great work, then I said, all right, I'll go along with that. So he called Miss Powers, and we all three came down to the administration building here, to my office down there, and turned the letter over for her to read. And so at the close of that, she said, well, said, you know, just leave this matter with me, since I've involved both ways, and leave this matter with me, and I'll handle it. And that was about the statement. And so those were preliminary things, and some things even in between there, I'll not try to go through all of them right here, But anyway, Brother Hall makes a statement here that the first public, you see, these things been handled out among the discipline committee, and when Brother Hardeman returned from a meeting in which he was at that time back to the campus, then the family took it up and went with it from there. And during that time, we think, Brother Whit and I think agree on this particular point, that without going into all the details there, that there was some very poor handling of the matter leading up to what happened at this particular time. Brother Whit, would you like to make a comment right there on an incident or two
right in there that came up to this meeting here that Brother Hall referred to there, first public?
I don't think so. I think you covered it fine.
Okay. Okay. All right. In other words, it was in the hands of the family pretty well up to that time, but the way it was handled, then two of the boys involved in it and so on, and then other students and so on, thought that they had taken a little advantage of them and hadn't given them due deserts in their position and so on. And so that's what finally brought it out into the open.
Fine.
All right. So Brother Hall goes on from that point, says, these letters should never have been made public. But Brother Hardeman did take them up and read them and condemned the boys greatly and so forth. The two boys, Carol Rankel and Clifford Yeldale, were severely criticized and caustically and unjustly condemned before the chapel student body. No sooner was this done than the vast majority of students began to take the boys' part. But bad matters grew worse when Brother Hardeman refused to let the boys defend themselves. He wanted them to submit papers censored by the faculty. This was an exceedingly grave error. I might say at that point, having heard all that went through, and I was greatly moved by it and agitated and head drooping, I think, because of the caustic Brother Hall referred here, and the entire faculty, I would say, at that particular time were in a state of humiliation. And when Brother Hall and when Brother Hardeman dismissed that day and started to leave, I stepped forward to him and I said, Brother Hardeman, I said, those boys must have a hearing. I said, they've got to be heard. He said, well, all right, later we'll arrange that, or something like that. So they did leave the chapel that morning, but that's a statement of at that time. So isn't that correct?
Yes, sir. That's Friday morning.
Yes, sir. That's right. The next day, when the boys demanded to defend themselves, the students became boisterous and became unmanageable by Brother Hardeman. This meeting, in an uproar, continued for nearly 2 hours, when it could have been dismissed by allowing the boys a little time to defend themselves. Another great error, I think. I agree with him 100%. You do too, don't you,
yes,
Brother Whit? All right. Now, I'll comment on a few things that happened in the meantime right there. There was a meeting of the registrars in Jackson on that particular weekend. Now, you see, we had school on Saturdays then,
yes,
and Monday was our off day.
Yes.
There was a meeting of the registrars, and Lois Smith Rhodes, and Brother Woodson here knows a little bit. I helped to train her. Sister
right?
Oliver. I gave her her first job, and she worked for me on up to where she was assistant registrar and my secretary and so on when this thing happened. And she was a faithful co-worker, I'll tell you, in it, too. Anyway, the time came when they were going to have a registrar meeting, kind of a West Tennessee or state meeting, one or the other. And so I wanted to learn all I could, so I carried her up there on Saturday to that meeting and attended it for her in particular, her attendance. And about noon on Saturday, Sister Hamilton called me, got hold of me there in the meeting, lunch or something like that time, and told me what the situation was. She said, Brother Olin says you're going to have to come. Said the students all in the shop call and won't leave. Said Brother Whips, reasoning with them and trying to get them to go ahead and let other things develop and so on. But said, I think you ought to come. I said, I'll be down there as soon as I can get there. So I left Jackson, headed for the chapel hall. And on the way, I did some strong meditating and prayer.
When you got here, I think you were dismissed.
Yeah, you had. I was coming right up to that. I was coming right up to that. Yeah. All right.
So on the way, meditating, and Brother Witt, I never had told anybody this but my wife, since this has all come up, being renewed, and we're hoping Brother Woods and Brother Gardner would prefer her for us, of course, for us to be very careful handling all this information.
I understand.
But we both, and I think you all agree, the history of the college really requires some of this.
It has to.
Else there's going to be a big gap there, and the question will be why in the future, and unsettled things of facts and so forth and so on. And although I had hesitated and meditated and approached it knowing it was going to affect me, but I felt like it was due, and I told Brother Gardner I was going to try to be careful and only and not introduce anything or so on that would hurt anybody today or hurt the college in reaching any kind of a reconciliation, if possible, with any of those involved in it. I would say, so that's my attitude, and that's what I'm trying to do. Well, anyway, on the way, I made up my mind, if I got here, and there was still a chapel, and we were still reasoning with them and so on, trying to calm it down, that I was going to get
Brother Hardeman and Karen Neal, if I could, together,
and tell them that I believe the solution to the whole thing was their stating the truth, admitting the error in handling it, and they could even say that I was involved in some error, that had I known it was going to take the path and the direction it did, I might have done otherwise. And therefore, they could include me in saying and admitting that it hadn't been handled up to that point, and if they'd go ahead and do that, and let those students get up then, and present their side of the case, and so on like that, that I thought that would solve it. Now, that was my thought as I drove to Henderson that day. Lois stayed on up at the meeting, but I drove down here, got here as soon as I could. But when I got here, Brother Witt had been able to get them to leave the chapel hall, and that was the start, you might say, of a sit-down opposition. Isn't that right, Brother Witt?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. The students organized strongly, and with the help and encouragement of some of the faculty, made a watertight organization which stayed loyal to the boys throughout. Now you see, there's the start of an organized opposition to Brother Hardeman's continuing. Actually, he provoked it through the happenings and poor management and handling and publicity. He gave it unduly and so forth like that.
The students had met on the Friday night full and organized.
Good.
Before that chapel meeting, elected the three members, one called the chairman of the student body, and they were the ones that actually wouldn't let them leave chapel. When Brother Hardeman tried to dismiss them, the president of the freshman class staff followed and said, "Now we're going to hear these boys read their papers. We can't have justice here. We go over to the courthouse." Brother Hardeman begged them not to go to the courthouse, and let's settle it here. And then there were about 2 hours there of most terrible thing I've ever seen here. I had to get up and leave. It hurt me so bad.
Now, was this one time you mentioned on Friday morning?
This is Saturday
you
morning.
And
that's
then
Saturday
this is
morning.
Day.
That was a regular
next
school
morning.
Day. Saturday was a regular school day. And that was Saturday morning at the regular chapel.
Chapel program.
That's right. And that's where that started a lot of what went on. And that's the background and reason for it. Although I've reread Ms. Powers' statement regarding this, very brief and incorrect in the number of points and not complete and so on like that. And I mean to read a few sentences of it, put it in the record here and comment on it also. But none of this is in it. There's a big gap in this account that does injustice to the faculty and to all of us involved in the settlement of it finally.
There was a public denunciation, Brother Hardeman, the discipline committee, even his family up there for about an hour and a half, even name calling. Brother Hall tried to speak and they wouldn't listen to him because he was on the discipline committee. That's when they came out in the hall and approached me, some of the married fellows, wanted me to help get it quiet. It was terrible confusion and
things ought not to ever occurred. It went on in there. When I asked for the floor, one of these boys, Carol
Wrinkle,
who was in my class, Bible class, stood up and asked them to hear me, and they got quiet. And I asked them if the chapel would be dismissed and to go to our classes at 1 o'clock, I believe, and try to forget the matter for the time being. And that Brother Hardin would let the boys read the papers first of the next week. He said that he would, and I believe he'd keep his word. That's essentially what I said.
And I might comment here, as you begin to see, that Brother Witt really was in a position
then to do something none of the rest of us could have done as well. I was in tolerably good position because I always had a great sympathy for the students. And in this, I knew that there was going to be harm, but I wanted everyone involved in it to take his part of it and not try to throw it all off on somebody else. And so that's what Ms. Powers unfortunately does in her book here, practically, by skipping everything of this particular kind that entered into the final solution of it. Mm-hmm. And so that involved me because really some literature came out after all this was done and we took over and so on. They called me and Brother Paul both for the fact that finally we had to decide between the college letting it fail and so on, and Brother N.B. Hardeman and his position at that particular time, we had to do that. So in some literature that came out early in the administration of Brother Dixon after he was elected, this literature accused leaders of us at that time being hypocrites and so on, a number of other different terms. That was
in other words, Brother Witt, you were in more of a neutral position, not being on this board and being
correct
able
correct.
To work with both the board and the student body.
That's right. And he did an excellent job. That's one reason I wanted him in this meeting.
Excellent.
And the board, of course, finally included him with him and Brother Hall and myself to be the three to turn the college over to it at that time. And I might comment right here as these things come to me that about the second or third day after the board did turn over to this committee of us, Brother Hall, Brother Witt, myself, the operation of the college, then which was to take effect, as they said, of course, at the end of the session. That was kind of a general understanding at that time. But second or third day after that, I went back in Brother Hardeman's office, which was about two doors away from mine at the time, and I said, well, I'm very sorry for all the things that happened, Brother Hardeman, but I think the board has done the best it could and the right thing, made a good study of it, and we're willing to take what responsibility we can. And then he said, well, since it's in the state it is then, and since the board has accepted my resignation, then I'm saying that I'll just leave it in your hands commencing now. So that was Brother Hardeman's decision. He said to me, said, you all just take it. Said, I'm going to come down and teach my Bible class till the end of the session. And said, I'll be on the campus occasionally, part of the time, a little bit, and so on like that. I'll be on the campus some. But says, now you three who are going to set it up for the next session and in charge in every way by the board, said, you all just take it now and go forward with it.
Now, was this after the Saturday morning meeting?
Oh, yes. Yes, we'll get to that finally, maybe. I don't know when, but
it's all right.
You're speaking with the Saturday morning chapel program. And Brother Witt, you have talked to them. Do they dismiss at this time after you have talked to them?
Yes.
All right, and then you can go on.
All right, so there's three or four new developments right there. Ms. Power said nothing about any of this as related in explaining it in her book. She skips a couple of places, skipping a year or two each time.
All right, well, take it from there then and
right.
Fill in.
All right.
What?
And I think I can change the rest of it probably without injecting much, since I don't want to.
Let me add this,
all right,
Roland.
What's it?
These interjections give perspective and meaning to the sentences here, and I think that whoever utilizes this material could read that document, but he never could get the explanatory
context.
Think
I'm, now that I'm trying to help the college all I can with any experience or information or association or all those different things, I'm willing to be asked by you and other men in positions you are and something like that, commented by Brother Witt or Brother Gardner on what to include and what not to. But I'm willing to put it for use for the future, for good, anything, so you can be free to ask. That way, and Sister Oliver here, the library, and also I might add this right at this particular point, that Brother Sewell is doing some videotaping, and of course there'll be review in some of these things, but I'm not going into detail like I am here on these points. But he has a set of questions along, and I'm just answering his questions.
Well, I feel
in
like
a videotape.
Brother Woodson. that you should, anything you think of as you're going through this.
Well, that's the reason I took this basic, the briefest one of these, and took it as the basis this morning. And I thought if we got over it this morning, it'd be about all we could do.
And that's the reason I started with 1950.
Well, that's fine.
The reason I started in 1950.
From a historical standpoint, I would like at certain points to have asked David Lipscomb some questions about some articles he wrote. He wrote, you know.
And I think I understand. I would agree with you, 100%. I don't know about those articles myself.
All right.
And I disagree strongly with a number of them.
Yes.
I just add that. Well, all right, here we go with the remainder of this brief article, Brother Hall, which is a good one. The students organized strongly. Now that's where the skip comes in some accounts of this. And with the help and encouragement of some of the faculty, made a watertight organization, because the faculty could not conscientiously go along with a lot of the practice and procedure and all that had been in there. Animosity and hatred were engendered and grew to mountain heights. I've never seen such real hatred in any set of people than was aroused by the above note actions. The board finally came for their all-night meeting, and seeming all matters were settled. Now, I might say that I knew all about the calling of the board at that time, and I thought myself that you'd all be in on it, so no telling what the end of it was going to be. And so I was for that, and some of the faculty were more strongly in favor of that. Brother Bradfield, for instance, who had also come in this decade, that really 1940-50, and had grown in his abilities and work for the college and loyalty to it, and so on. And he kind of took the position and said, well, the board has to be brought. And I rather think, it's my opinion, maybe he called some of them personally. I don't know. They waited for Brother Hardeman to call the board.
Well,
you know, Brother Whitney?
The students called.
Well, the students, okay.
Yes, right after we were out, about 11, about 1:30, while they were getting the phone number, the catalog, getting addresses, and they called chairman of the board and some others and told them if they wanted to say Free Hardeman, they better come on down here. Then they called Brother Hardeman, and he said, well, he didn't know whether he needed to come or not, but they made the decision to come.
Okay.
I think Brother Bradfield may have had something to do with it, but the students initially contacted them and said, you have to come and help save the school if it's saved.
All right.
Good. The board finally came for their all-night meeting. The board finally came. Now, this will be some few days after that first initial, finally coming down, check to see whether they needed to have a whole board meeting.
It is early the next week.
That's right. It was pretty early the next week.
They adjourned. They met rather at 10 o'clock in the morning and stayed here till some 5 o'clock the next morning. Time out to eat was all.
All right. The board finally came. Now, that's the night Brother Witt just mentioned. For their all-night meeting, the first one, seemingly all matters were settled, and I think it would have remained so had both parties kept the demands and regulations made by the board. These were not kept by either side. Brother Hardeman let Sister Petty go, which he could have prevented and should have under the circumstances. That put another torch into the oil barrel, and a great conflagration resulted. Now, we're not going to detail on that. I don't think it's too loud and time would forbid right now on that particular point, but a number through there that shows there was mishandling and, of course, might be expected to get. But I also will comment one point on the first part of that, is that the board worked out a settlement there, complete, and that's the time they produced the resolution of it.
Right.
10 or 12, how many were they?
Something like 8 or 10, yes.
Well, okay, resolutions. But the first one is the vital one. And that sets it up for the future, I might say, and that's the reason I'm mentioning that particular one. The first one, in which it is said, the board, after its study and all this, realized the time has come when there needs to be, I may not be quoting this, Brother Wood, but I think I'm giving accurate thought, needs to be a change of the administration. That's about correctly a quote. It's mighty close to it. Yeah. The first one of those resolutions. Now, because the others were all good, and I'll just comment and finally finish right at that point with them, that this was agreed to by all involved. The Hardeman family, the student leaders had been kind of handling that, the faculty members that had said, well, we can't go along any further with Brother Hardeman as president, on account of these matters happening, ways handling them and everything. Need to be a change and so forth. So, but the board worked out a set of resolutions. They were presented to all the factors in it, and they all approved and agreed it, and set a time about a week after that chapel when everyone representative of these different involvements, elements, and so on, in, would speak to that point and thus reach a complete public reconciliation. A public reconciliation. And we did it. And I'll make a comment that I'm the only witness, and there will be a few of these things that I'll have to say that. I wish I had others like Brother Whitney on a number of these points. But after that was done, they set a date for the chapel to be devoted to a public recognition of these resolutions, agreement on the part of all about them and so forth. Well, Brother Leathers, was he chairman at that time, or had Brother Black, Brother R.E. Black? I can't remember who was chairman when they had these meetings, but Brother Leathers was in a very important relation in more than one way, and occupied that and filled it good all through, of course, till we chose Brother Dixon to succeed and be the president in the next administration. Brother Leathers told me, came down to my office after that, and he said, I'm going to be here next week at chapel.
I said, well, I sure am happy to hear that, Brother Leathers. I wish it would be a number board present
at that chapel.
And he commented this. He said, I'm coming to see if Brother Hardiman speaks his sentiment from the heart.
Now, that was his comment.
Right.
And he came. John Leathers and Dixon. He had another vital part later on in the final.
You remember we set up a tape recorder to record that also, so we play it back and forward in our next meeting.
Good comment, Brother Whitney. Now,
you and I talked about that, and you asked me to get it up for there, and I did.
Okay, as I said, there's so much involved in all this. My memory back that far, and I've tried to forget most of it, so. So, well, where are we?
That put another torch in the oil barrel in a great conflagration, and is talking about handling of a matter involving Ms. Petty, who was working in the cafeteria at that time. I don't think it's vital that we go into all the details of that. Now, really, Brother Hall, right here goes pretty much into detail. Maybe I should read, as I'm reading his historical review of this, punish the board, if we don't get quite through it this morning. The students came in possession of the private letter written to Billy Nix. Now, Billy Nix is her son-in-law. The students came in possession of the private letter written to Billy Nix about the dismissal of Sister Petty, which got involved in this whole thing, circulated an answer to what they thought was a misrepresentation of facts. Three of the leaders of students allowed their names to appear on this anonymous letter and circulated about 800 copies. This was exceedingly wrong, according to my judgment.
Well,
Brother Hardiman did wrong. He doesn't clear either one of them. He condemns them both. Which I guess is right. Very good. Brother Hardiman did wrong in sending the letter. He sent to Billy Nix in sending a copy of it to each of the elders of the church where Billy preaches. That's what Brother Hardiman, Billy Paul is saying. He shouldn't have done, by all means, taken a private letter with that kind of stuff in it and sent it out to the elders of the congregation, which had the supposition on mind that they wouldn't tolerate him any longer as their preacher or something like that. Brother Hyman did wrong in sending a letter. He sent to Billy Nix and sent in a copy of it to each of the elders of the church where Billy preaches. When Brother Hardiman allowed to appear in the commercial, now this goes to the final stage right here, and I'll have a comment connected with that right there. But I'll read it first. When Brother Hardiman allowed to appear in the commercial appeal that he would resign when he was ready. Now that's a quote from a commercial appeal. Now I'll have to comment right there just a little bit to understand that, because you said Brother Woodson a while ago.
That's on the front page, commercial appeal.
Early the next week now, after this is settled with the board, and so on. Now after settled the board night, they put us in charge, in the executive committee to operate the college. And Brother Hardiman had
said to me that he is going to put us in charge right then. And all everything but teaching a Bible class. And
no, this over that, Brother Rowan. This is before the third meeting of the board. That's when they put us. Yes, sir. This is between the second and third meeting.
Okay, be right. Thanks, Brother Wood, for the comment. Thanks for the comment. That's right. But anyway, what I'm fixing to say is what happened right there at that particular point in between those two. That is, knowing that Brother Hardeman had an appointment at what congregation in Memphis?
McLemore Avenue
that weekend, and that he'd be staying in a hotel in Memphis. I went into his office on Friday because he usually went to his appointments on Saturday. I went into his office on Friday and I said, Brother Hardeman, I said, now the board has settled this, and I think a fair and fine settlement. And we've all got up and made comments, and we have taken our part of the blame and confessed and so forth. And I think everything's in good shape, and we'll continue to work on all of that way to the end of the session. But I said, you're going to Memphis, and you know what these newsmen and all these reporters have been doing during the time this is going on. They grabbed the little portion of it they could and magnified some of it and so on, and they'll just be happy to, so they'll be contacting you with my judgment. And I said, please don't give them any information. It's already been settled. And I said, be exceedingly careful what you say to them, because it could be opened again or something like that. Well, I don't know the answer. I can't remember. But I know one thing. I warned him, and that's all I could do. And he didn't take it. So that's what really opened it up again and led to the final acts of it. And the book here has nothing on any of that.
No.
Fact is, I don't guess she knew it all, in the sense. Mm-hmm. But she ought not to have written until she got data from all those that did know. That's where I'd condemn her for that, and skipping certain sections. Doing it that way. Yeah. Before she could have got it, I'd been glad to have told her those facts. When Brother Hardeman did wrong, saying, well, no, I've read that. When Brother Hardeman allowed to appear in the commercial appeal now, that he made the statement now with that first resolution of the board, saying they saw the time had come in which there should be a change of administration. And so on. And they asked Brother Hardeman, well, when does that take place? That means then that this is your last session there and so on? He said, no, that's not what it meant. No, that wasn't what it meant. Well, that's it. Brother Hardeman did wrong. No, I got that. When Brother Hardeman allowed to appear in the commercial appeal, and he allowed it by talking to those reporters and answering their questions as he answered them, that he would resign when he was ready. I think that's pretty well a quote.
That's correct.
Yes, yeah. This aroused the already angered students more than ever. The climax came when the students were led into a complete exodus from the campus and left our classes almost completely depopulated. This method of settling difficulties is entirely wrong in anyone, much less so in the students and teachers of a well-founded Christian college. I do not endorse that manner of rectifying wrong anywhere or at any time. And I'll agree with him 100% in that, and I conducted myself in keeping with it throughout the entire thing. I never did attend a meeting of the students. I worked with the administration and the board all through and cooperated, and never yielded a point to my conscience or conviction throughout. So I agree with him on that statement. Now that the school is practically wrecked for the present, I think I can look back and see a multiplicity of errors on both sides. The school torn into shreds, as this notice, and all my association, a school torn into shreds, as this one,
makes one of the most uncalled for episodes
which has ever come to my notice in all my associations with the church. What is to be done? I do not know. I have that misconfidence and respect for 15 men to make up this board, and these men, weighing the facts, will be able to come to some satisfactory conclusion to which I'm willing to subscribe 100%, whether it fits me personally or not. To dictate to this board would be preposterous and unwise. If, however, I were called upon to suggest any procedure, I could and would do so. That's the reason I wrote this one.
That's a good statement. That last one, Brother Hall.
Doesn't it? Brother Witt and I gave a little more detail. If he gave some that I didn't have in mind, I gave. We all wrote those independently. We didn't know what each one of us turned into the board.
Yes, for that.
That's right. Absolutely independent. I spent the day in Jackson, Tennessee, in a hotel.
Couldn't stay. No.
Two other points I'll name this morning. The lead up or involved in the statement made there. It's not in this, but with as it is, and I have it in mind, but the whole didn't see that fit to include it.
As the students began to leave Farm, it came to a climactical head, and they began to withdraw. Our enrollment at that time, starting the new quarter, was somewhere between 300 and 350. About 325 would be my estimate, I guess. And 350. Well, by that end of that Saturday, as I recall, was it Monday we went? It was Monday,
yes, that we went to Nashville.
Yes.
Okay, well,
they were just packing up all day long there, those days. Brother Hardeman went on to his meeting in Nashville and was holding the meeting, staying in the hotel there. And they were leaving, and I went to an appointment in Indianapolis, Indiana, and rode all night on the bus before we went to Nashville the next day, getting back here. Grace called me.
How long were the students out?
We'll wait till I finish. Sure, I will come and blow with you if he desires to right at this point. They were leaving all day long, canceling and checking out and so on. And they got down finally to wherever there was about 100 left.
Okay.
Well, and so Grace called me and said, get home any way you can, the quickest way you can. Said the students knew all left the campus.
They were enrolling in Harrington and Gibson just before the time of date to enroll for that spring quarter. They were on quarter system.
Quickest transportation on the Ohio, and I did. And so Kareem and Brother Witt and Brother Hall and I got together, and we decided to go to Nashville to visit Brother Harden and tell him the situation. As one of the board members said, he told him in the meeting when Brother Harden mentioned something about what he was going to do for the college or would do for the college. He said, Brother Hardman, you don't have any school. I'm not sure that wasn't John Lewis. But one of them told me that and commented that he answered him that way in a comment that he made regarding. He said, Brother Hardman, you don't have any school, baby. So such a big proportion of students had already checked out, left, and gone. And those were in the act. Well, that was the reason we went in such a big hurry, because we went to try to save a remnant.
That's right.
So we got together, we three, and went to Nashville to see Brother Hardman. And on the way up, Brother Witt and I elected Brother Hall to be the spokesman.
But we stood behind him and backed him and argued it with Brother Hardman.
But we couldn't convince him that he ought to tender his resignation and cooperate with the board and with Lewis and all that we were trying to say in school. But he finally made that statement that we all have in, I think. Now, Brother Hall didn't take that, we have to hear it.
Yeah.
Brother Hardman's statement right then to us. You quoted, and I did too, in mine. And Brother Hardman, you quoted Brother Witt, as you remember.
He said, Brother Hall, if it puts you in as president, they throw you out like you didn't do the symptom. He said, I don't believe in getting in as students. So if you three brethren stay with me, we'll open up the door to Fleet Harlem next fall. Start from the ground and build it again.
But he said, that final sentence, it is when I quote and so on, he said,
but I will not resign unless the board requests me to if the last student leaves the college,
right,
or leaves the campus.
Right.
Now that's the thing that became a,
yes.
I put that in mind, and you did too, I think, and the board considered that statement that he made.
Correct.
How's that again, man?
Brother Hardman's final statement there, to making some suggestions of possibility and so on to us three, was that he would not resign. That is, get out of session with the inferences, as we understand.
Right.
He was kind of planning a setup for him and us three to go ahead and operate a school before we could get together from the next fall, you see. And then ended with the summons, the way we're quoting out here too, in which he said, "But I'll not resign or get out of my position and so on unless the board requests me to if the last student leaves the campus." And I think that's a quote.
Yes, essentially.
That's the only information we could bring back. Now, you came and met the students and we gave them a report. If we made that trip,
No, I didn't.
I think I made you know
jail the time with you. I think Lord Dehar gave him a report that night or two after that.
Well, maybe that's the way that was. All right. But anyway, we made the effort to save him official requirement. He wouldn't accept it.
Hold on. Now, this book has none of that. And my time's up, and I'll not read a face of it unless you want me to put it into the record.
You did as you see fit. A lot of expression on your mind. I think from a historical perspective, now you've got all of the material going.
I just have two brief statements I want to read. The sentence of two and one, and comment on it, and then the sentence of two and the other one. Now, this is the biography of William B. Hardman, written by his daughter, Miss Powers, Manuel Hardman Powers, and Brother Powell. Marvin Powell. So I'll commence with the first place that I see that is incomplete and leaves the wrong impression in Tyler and ignores some facts that are
very in the completion in the history of Fred Arnold College. This is found on page 102 under the topic heading. She's emphasizing him as a wise master builder, William B. Hardman, her father. It's down in the last paragraph, the sentence that I'm reading.
In 1923, the two men separated. Now, she's speaking of Blaise Freed, the first president, of course, and her father, William B. Hardman. Freed going to David Lipson College and Hardman for two tremendously busy years in meetings.
In 1925,
Fred Hardman College had so deteriorated in patronage and influence that it was about to close its door. The board persuaded Hardman to return as president. There she skipped 2 years and opens up with a false statement, false impression. Now, I'm so noted in your book, brother. I'm signing it.
Here's a lot of it.
Okay. Now, the fact is, as we stated time and again, this deterioration of the student body and the difference between the two men had started back as early as 1918 and 1920 between them. And the support of the school, the patronage, and the attendance had all run down. The first, and that's one reason Bill Hardman brought me here in 1921. The two reasons. She skips that 2 years of our clearing and opens up this little
field.
But
now,
such a rundown state on the men of the hall over it. They brought him back safe.
Now that's an inference, of course,
which is not the truth at all.
And here's the fact, as I stated there a moment ago. Brother Freed and Brother Hardman disagreed on many points. Fortunately, the two or three main points involved in the way they got to where they couldn't work together as they had in the beginning and on up to that time. And it was going to where it was separating support, separating the patronage that was involved in the student body very strongly at the time I came here and all that. Now, I didn't know a lot of this when I came. I learned it after I came in 1921. But it was a really bad situation. Quite a criticism crossfire between the two families and all that. Both the families had kept women boarders in their home. One of them thought the other was too lax in enforcing the discipline.
the school, and that one flopped out in the school acts, and that's the your family's got at odds with one another. Number two is, Brother Freed was the staunchest supporter of independent education. That if you go take a course and you do well in it and you prove yourself, you take your grades out and off them to the world and you train and everything, and you don't need any connection with associations or organizations or anything of that kind, whatever, and so forth. But the time had come, Bill Hardman began to see the handwriting, although he couldn't do it himself and couldn't contribute to it. So he never did attend, as far as I recall now, he never did attend as president during the years.
1925, when Brother Hollowell had so managed it by the board's own suggestions and planning for us those 2 years, that we get it into some approving organization. And we got it into NC College Association, of course, in April. I believe we met in April that year, 1925. So we accomplished one of the objectives that they specified to us when they elected us in 1923, when Freed and Hardman both withdrew on account of their own differences in the tenants and the student body of the room and down. As I recall, and I think my memories are right on this, we enrolled 110 or 15 students, all told. Now that's the elementary grades, high school, everything. The morning I felt my first classes here for enrollment. Now, she opens up in 1925 with a deteriorated student body and everything, and that took place in 1919 and 1920. And our coming here and selling the state to board and everything was trying to save it. She didn't know that. No. Try to save it. And so they just read over such points as that, very strong. Now, I'm going to say right here, and I reread her book here, their agreement in that, I knew about the meeting in Marysville at the time, where the brethren came and met with them, and how that they worked together, and so on, and finally brought out this statement that she has here, very beautiful, and that's great, and I like to refer to it. That they did it before either of them.
All right. Yeah.
But, now to finish this particular part right here, then that's false statement.
Yes, sir.
False statement, that's it. And the board laid it upon us when Hardman withdrew for 2 years and Brother Freed for 2 years, and they settled up completely with him and they left one to Marshall and so on, like the Brother W. Claude Hall and the approved model, continuing work as the dean and so on there. And so
we took it in that condition, 1923. Took it in that condition. And to carry out their design request and one of the purposes with us, who both had been public educational men, knew all the state men from the Commission of Education down. They were our schoolmates, Bill Hall's mine. He had taught in Dave Lipson College, and I had taught in Parker County, then Council of Trump and so on. And so one of the points put upon us. Well, to do that, we had to employ more faculty. And we had to get in bigger debt and all those different things and so on like that. And we got in an embarrassing situation doing what they had laid on us to do with the school at that time.
Now I might comment right here on that point, bring it in because of the history that's later connected with this. Through the Cope family,
I believe the Brother Hall brought one of the faculty members here whose wife was a sister of my name right there. Failing me just slightly. Sister Campbell. Her husband was a business manager here a while once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. They had stock in the Washington Manufacturing Company. And through them, Washington Manufacturing Company, that's Brother Comer's company. See, they sent $1,000 down here to me and Brother Hall in that spring term to help us through that financial thing.
So that was the situation. But anyway, the board asked us both to continue in the school. I did, and Brother Hall at the time thought he would, but later changed his mind and went to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and was called back to the school later. Well, that's the first one of these. In 1925, Frederick Arnold College had so deteriorated in patronage and influence it was about to close its doors. The board persuaded Hardeman to return as president. And that's a lot of incorrect statements, and that's the thing. Now, the next one. The next one is found on page 126. Her statement, page 126, down the last statement, paragraph in the chapter. I'll read a few sentences. The college was a ripe plum. Now, this is 1950, of course. The college was a ripe plum, in prestige and in physical assets. Small wonder that the eye of envy and evil ambition came to rest on it. There had been a glimmer in the early spring of 1949 that indicated this feeling, but none of the old guard, quote, connected with the school, thought it of lasting importance. In January of 1949, the board conferred with Hardeman, then a vigorous 74-year-old, she meant to say he, Brother Hardeman, was a vigorous 74-year-old man, but beginning to talk of retirement. Now, he'd been talking that to a number of us for at least 5 years, and he'd been making plans, because it's well known that he asked Jim Cope to come here with the idea that he would be a possible successor and something like that, and that was 5 years before this. But that happened. The board requested him to stay on with the college another 5 years, particularly in view of the need to add a wing to the boys' dormitory, Paul Gray Hall. Now, I think that's a completely false statement. I have Jim Cope's word against Brother M.D. Hardeman's word, and I believe Jim Cope told the truth on that point. As time went on and we grew up to that point, and this group of men that had been chosen by Brother Hardeman, men and women together, to kind of be an unofficial advisory group to him through those years, as time went on and developments more, and he approached that day that he'd been speaking of to us and others at the college, that he thought he should retire when he reached 75, and so on. Then Jim began to press him to give him the official position so he'd be the successor. That is, he'd never been declared to be the vice president. Kind of accepted as an understanding. So Jim pressed Brother Hardeman to get the board in that spring meeting of 1949, March, I believe it was, to elect him and the board to set him in as the vice president. So, of course, that showed just a little lack of confidence of what had been done up to that point and so on, some of these things. So he pressed Brother Hardeman. He came over to our home, and Grace was present. She'd be witness to this conversation. He spent a couple of hours with us before that board meeting. 1949. No, Jim Cope. Jim Cope. And he came, although he visited us and so on, we had most friendly relations all the way through and great fellowship. He was preaching for the church at that time, too, I might mention that.
Regular preacher.
Yeah, regular preacher. So he came and we discussed things in general about the college and plans and so on up to a point. And then Jim asked me this question. He said, Brother Olin, in the working out of these things here, I want to ask you this question. He said, do you aspire to ever to the presidency out of your position here throughout the years of service and so forth? He said, do you aspire to the presidency? Do you have any interest in it? I said, no, Jim, not any at all. I said, I am where I think, with my experience and all my contribution, that I can make a better contribution to Freedom College to hold the place that I'm in now. And I said, I have no ambitions in that direction whatsoever. And here's Jim saying to me at that time, which I've never published before, he said, Brother Olin, you're a great man.
Yes, I do.
That's what Jim said to me.
That's right. And
Jim felt that he was sort of being pushed out at that time.
He was. That's the reason he went to Florida right soon after.
Just a while after that.
Yeah.
Brother Harden recommended him to Florida.
That's right.
R. Wilson
left. That's right. That's exactly
right. He recommended
him. Now, these are things that led up to Jim's going to Florida.
Right.
And up to that time, he was no Andy.
Oh, no.
And the church here had employed him for a meeting early in the 50s for a meeting. And Jim himself, though, couldn't face us. He wrote in chancery after he went to Florida.
Was there any rumor in an official way that Brother DeHoff was being considered?
Well, no, I couldn't, as I said, I couldn't get to all this, and therefore, some other time now, I'm still, because I never expect to sit down. I can't sit down. I'm too muscular, nervous, and otherwise, and so forth, to sit down and spend a period of writing history. And Brother Gardner told me, in our conversation yesterday, and he said, well, I said, some history ought to be written. I think he dreads trying to give this history to this particular time.
Not officially, but he had been introduced in one of the clubs here, one of the city clubs, as the next president of Free Garden College.
By
Mayor Nail.
Well, now, that's good. I didn't remember that particular thing. And I might say this now. We haven't brought Jim into any of this at all, and so we might spend a little time on that sometime. Now, I'd want to review and refresh a little bit before I went into that. But Jim was late in all this before he resigned.
Yes.
Yeah. He was in some meetings officially with us on this thing after it got started.
Were there faculty members who supported Brother Hardiman during this episode and felt that he had been or was being mistreated?
Well, no, I don't know that I can answer that. I don't recall.
When you say faculty and staff, I say yes. And I would say faculty, some few on the faculty.
Other than his family?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that's right.
Yes, there was some sympathy with him. Two or three faculty members and about three or four staff members. They were lawyers to them, but it was sort of blind loyalty. They
didn't come to the position we were in. It's either Brother Hardiman. They forced us into that position, you see. Brother Hardiman did himself. It's either Brother Hardiman or the college. Which one is my duty to say the future belongs to?
Right.
And I made my decision for the college, and up to that point, I never had thought
about it. Was there anyone who seriously attempted to gainsay the written material that was submitted? You mentioned Wrinkle and Yeldale. Was there anybody that attempted to offset this as a fact?
You mean Carineal's conduct,
yes,
or what?
That Carineal had not done as they said she had done in the letters.
Well, that thing got into the big tangle now. I don't know what. I don't know. That thing got in a big tangle when they got to handling it, and when the Hardiman family, as I think I'll be making a correct statement, when they began to dictate to all these boys involved, the one who wrote the letter to that got in the hands of, was written to Yeldale?
Yes, sir.
The letter from Beard was written to Yeldale.
Right.
All right. And when it got into their hands, and then Marinell, and I don't know who all was with her, took it in their hands to handle it, and then they prepared a letter. Now, I don't know whether they prepared that one for Beard, but prepared one for Wrinkle and Yeldale, which demanded that they accept their statements on. That became a point of issue, didn't it?
Yes, and that was read for the board, and there was no objections made to it, as I recall.
Now, you mentioned
read and accepted. They wrote what took place at the time they began to skate together. Carineal and this young man began to skate together until the thing that precipitated all of it. And It was read to the board, and the board had no reason to question it. That was the other thing to read the student body.
But later he renounced it, didn't he?
No, now, Billy Baird wrote two letters.
Okay.
The letter you referred to first, the one they brought to your house,
yeah,
was the one he wrote the other day asking for help.
Yeah.
He was all disturbed over this business going out with a married woman, take her skating. What shall I do? And they wrote him back and said, keep on praying, but let this thing alone. In other words, just quit right where you are. And then, after it got into the hands of the family, they met with him and forced him to write another letter. Said, now this wasn't sold, was it? And you tone this down here and so on. His second letter was written just more or less cutting off the corners of the first one everywhere it could. And this wasn't quite the truth, and this wasn't the truth, and so on. And when he got through, he said, this is the truth. And the first letter is false, so help me God, and signed it. And there the letters Brother Harbin read in chapel. And I could have gone through the hole in the floor if there'd been one there. I never thought about it, reading a thing like that in chapel. And that's where
he read the second letter.
He read both of them. He read the first one like it was written. I read it later. He read it just word for word.
But that was one of the things that kept it, that fired it up into the big flame and everything, was his bringing so much of this to chapel that he didn't have to.
He built a case in chapel against these two boys who were trying to dominate this other fellow, trying to be popes, as he called them, to run his life, tell him what to do. And they were listening to this gossip. That's why he wrote them this letter.
Who wrote the letter? Beard?
Beard.
The Beard wrote the letter.
During the Christmas vacation, you see. He wrote the letter, and he wanted some help. And he said they had made themselves popes and controlling his lives. And all that. And then he took it out on those two boys for 20 minutes and denounced them and called them those names. He said, I'm canceling Wrinkle's appointment. He has the best paying appointment of any student. I got it for him, but I'm canceling it. And this was all public in chapel. And then after he had demeaned them and they sat there and took it that length of time, they stood up, both of them, I believe, and one of them said, Brother Harbin, no, we have a word to say in reply to them. And he said, no, sit down. And Brother Rowland.
And then I got up and went to him as fast as I could.
Yes.
And where I was seated, I said, Brother Harbin, I said, that was the wrong answer, the wrong decision. I said, those boys have got to be heard.
Yes. Then he said he would let them bring what they had to say by in writing, could bring it by his office, let him check it over before
he sent it. Everything must be censored by him, and doubtless we found later Marinell in his palace.
Well, then actually, Wrinkle and Yeldale were giving secondhand testimony from contact with Billy Baird.
Right.
Beard.
B-E-A-R-D,
Beard.
Well, now, Beard had apparently been skating with Carrie Neal for some time.
And as I remember, she was inviting him. I don't think he carried her in his car. I think she invited him, to go to these skating places. They got started down here, a thing that, now I have a lot of notes on what occurred different ways, but that are different from this entirely from 1940 to 1950 here. I meant to use that until I got Brother Whitney, and I knew that this statement Brother Hall properly explained and so on would set more of this out in the time, and since Brother Whit could this time do this and be here today, and we both went through it all together and so forth, and then followed up with the new administration. He and I had critical parts in that. Brother Hall couldn't, and now I'll add John Lewis right there, and of course I'm willing to put any of this now further in another discussion of some of these things that any of you fellows want to ask a few more questions and get it brought out and so on in another tape. Now, here's what happened. After the settlement there and so on, and that board meeting, Brother Hardiman, by the board and with the board, today, let me get that straight in the happenings of it. They met to consider the $3,000 supplement for him after he retired. I think I'm right in that. They met to consider that, and held a meeting. Now, none of us got to attend that meeting and so on, but it'd been Greater Brother Dixon and I went to Nashville to see, to talk to the family and men in the Washington Manufacturing Company and so on. And in that meeting, they asked us, said, what was done for Brother Hardeman? We said, well, nothing yet. I said, we've been too busy about everything else and so distracted and so on. Nothing. Nothing yet. Well, Coma, I think someone
right.
asked the question. Well, they said, do you think you brethren can operate the college successfully down there if we devoted two checks, $1,500 each 6 months, to Brother Hardeman as a financial help and bonus and so on. So we don't know exactly what kind of position he's in financially and so on. He said, well, we don't either in a way, only we think he's in pretty good shape and won't suffer anything of that kind, but if you want to do that, they said, do you think you can carry the college on and something like that? And Brother Dick and I both answered yes. We think we can. We had that kind of faith in him.
Right.
And
so the board voted that.
And so then the board voted it. So now here's what came of that. It was understood by the Prosser and Leathers and various ones that later talked to me and so on. The board understood in that arrangement in which they had Brother Harding in on it and so on, I think I'm right it was, that he agreed with them that he would not be an enemy to the school as a result of all this, but that he would go out, kind of give him a good word or something like that. And they expected him to, and he didn't. And they were greatly disappointed. But some of that happened before Brother Dixon was elected, of course. We went ahead and drawn the faculty and all these things before we got to Brother Dixon, because that had to be slower and more got together. Well, after that board meeting now, and they did that, then John Leathers and John Anderson. Now, I believe it was John Anderson.
I think he was chairman.
Was the chairman of the board at this time. Now, that I'm glad to think
right.
of that. John Leathers and John Anderson, both up near each other in Middle Tennessee there, called Brother Hardeman in Memphis. They'd already gone to Memphis by this time. He was down there at least in April. And they asked him to meet them over here on the river for a conference, Leathers and Anderson. And they had the conference. When they finished the conference there, Brother Leathers went back home and called me, and we held a 30-minute conversation. That's the longest conversation I've ever held with any person in my life on a matter. He held me on the phone for 30 minutes, asked him questions and so forth and so on. Said, well, we had a meeting with Brother Hardeman this morning. John Anderson and I met him over on the river. I can't remember the name of the point down there now. And said, I just got back home. And says, when we got through discussing everything, especially to possibilities for the next president for the college, said, we asked him in that meeting, Brother Hardeman, would you support and go ahead and be friendly to and so on like that if Brother Dixon was elected to be the next president of the college? Of course, it all been. His name is rotating among us all as a possibility. Brother Hardeman, so Brother Leathers told me, said he would. Now that's up to somebody else to say whether he carried that promise to those two men out or not. Said he would. That's what Brother Leathers told me in that telephone conversation.
Well, before Brother Dixon accepted the presidency, he went out and talked to Brother Hardeman. You remember, he came before that morning the board met. That morning they met. He went up to Brother Hardeman's house and asked him if he would help him. Would he be behind the school? He told him he'd never help him.
Well, I'd forgotten that particular thing.
In fact, we told him we couldn't expect it. You have to go ahead from there on.
I didn't remember that, but I do remember, though, what followed that up, Brother Witt.
I called you, and I called Brother Hall, and Brother Hall was out, and you and I did what?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? We went to Florence.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Shaw immediately. I didn't let the rest of the day go
that,
by.
That was before Lord came to see
Well, yes,
told us
yes.
Down there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yes. I'm talking about the day that they met Brother Hardin.
Yes. We
John Leathers and John Anderson over here, and Brother Leathers went back home and called me on a 30-minute conversation on the telephone and told me what had transpired and that they'd asked Brother Hardin if he would go ahead if Brother Dixon were elected for the board to be the next president.
Right.
And when he told me that, I called for Brother Hall, and he is out, and next I called you, and since Brother Hall was not here to go, I said, let's go to Florence.
Yeah.
And we went that afternoon. Brother Whitney, I went that afternoon. No, it was that morning, Brother. It was that morning. We had lunch with Brother Dixon down there.
That's right.
That's right. Sure did.
Brother Dixon then agreed to be present.
No, right then he told us when we got through discussing everything.
He wanted Brother Hardin's blessing.
I see.
But he didn't
he wanted a little time, and that's all right. It suited us fine, but that he was giving it consideration and serious consideration and so on. I felt like when we left there that he would finally accept and so on, and when we got through everything and so on. And he said, well, I'll let you know in just a few days. He won't talk to Sister Dixon and the family and to others. He did. And so then he notified that he decided to accept it.
Well, about what time was this in the spring then? The episode, the crisis was in middle to late February.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
well now we're going on down.
In April now.
Yeah, that's right.
In April.
Now, there were three board meetings in the crucial time.
Correct.
Approximately when were these now?
Well, now, we have those. I don't believe they're all in Brother Hall's here. The first board meeting came immediately after the letter was presented.
Yes.
The letter was read.
Well, that first was that partial membership of the board. And then the next one that we spent all night there and got out those resolutions.
Well, the first one was about 21st February, Tuesday. Stay all night,
right.
The next morning.
Yeah.
And then it was some 3 weeks later when they came again.
I think I have these all dated in mine.
Yes,
every one of them separately and so on. I think I have them all dated.
And then the last one came toward the last of April.
Yeah.
Third week in April, it seemed like to me.
That's about right. I think that's right.
About 6 weeks before we were due to get out. We got out 1st of June then.
Yeah.
What about the student body by, say, the last of April? Had you been able to stabilize the 100 or so that were left?
Yeah.
What about the faculty? Were they pretty well stabilized, or were several of them planning to leave, or had they left?
Some were planning to leave. But they went on, and we didn't have any more repercussions. Things went pretty smoothly. And then the school was out.
But I'll tell you, it was a sorrowful time.
I reckon.
What about the funds for faculty salary and school expenses and operating and so on, with the students leaving this early in the year?
And no statement in the catalog about holding a certain part or anything at all. We had the refund, and it just practically broke the treasure. We started out with practically no treasury, but collected enough to pay out and keep
right.
In the... Sure did.
Now, was Brother Hardin here this last part, the time you're talking about now? Was he still here? When did he leave?
He would come up here and go to chapel.
On to the end of that session.
Yes.
Since that time, I reckon
he
never put his foot on it.
But he was still president at this time.
He received his salary during this time.
Sure, that's right.
And then afterwards, the $3,000 a year continued to be sent until his death.
Till his death, that's correct.
As you see this, was the incident of the skating really the problem that was caused, or was this a fuse?
No, that was just... two or three other things that I'll supplement. And later, if you want to get that, you've cut that off.
Not yet. Just I just wanted to get this statement. You don't have to go into it. I just wondered what you got.
Okay. Now, I'll answer your question. And I have a good basis for answering it. About a day or two before that final meeting of the board, to which Brother Hardeman did resign, they selected us as the committee to turn the college over to you at the end of the year at that time. And then Brother Hardeman turned it over to us immediately. Cara Neal called my wife. We were always very friendly. She's a very friendly girl. And she was crying. Grace had been making a statement ever since anything happened. And she is in the middle of it all but the first week. She was in the hospital in Jackson at the time it happened. First round of it. Cara Neal called her crying and says, Miss Grace, says, it looks like that this is going to lead to Papa's resignation in disgrace. And said, I'm the cause. That's what she said. And Grace said, no, Cara Neal. Said, you're not. You did set in motion. But don't think that you caused it all. Because you didn't. Now that was Grace's. She'd been making that statement ever since it happened, telling me all the way through that Cara Neal called her and says, and if he does, I'm the cause of it. That's what she said. And Grace said, no. Said, you're not the cause of it. Says there are a lot of factors in it. There have been other developments and so on. And without going into detail, she just assured her. Said, don't try to take it all on yourself. But she realized that her conduct had been questionable and had contributed to setting it all. That's it. That's the best illustration I know.
How old was Cara Neal at this time?
41.
41.
All right, what about Brother Hardeman at this time? Do you think that he acted by himself, or do you think he had encouragement maybe from others' family? Do you think he would have done otherwise if
no.
it had been himself? Or
no.
Was it a...
I'll answer that question. That I don't know, Brother Woods. Let's listen to this question then. All right. Sister Oliver's asking, do we think, or I think, she asked me and I'll answer it, do I think that Brother Hardeman was acting independently of himself in his position and so on, or was it not completely his activity, or was he controlled, I guess would be the inference or something like that. And my answer to that is that I think, and I'll give you the reason why in just a moment among other things, I think that he was not. Number one, I think he'd reached that age when he, as he'd said a number of times, realized that he couldn't, was not the man of ability and mentally and all these different things that he once was and so on like that, and that therefore he is relying more and more on somebody else's suggestions and counsel and so on. And the thing that I have in my notes there for this 10-year period was the loss of two men that had been great advisors and friends to Brother Hardeman, that would have been a help to him through this and might have had a greater influence than those of his children who took the position that he was being mistreated if he had to get out at this particular period, and they couldn't ever tolerate the idea of his not being the president of Free Hardeman College as long as he was able to walk backward and forward at least.
That's
and
right.
So on. Now that's my judgment, and that therefore I'd answer that question that way, and with one comment from the board that is a factual statement from one of them. I don't remember exactly which one, whether it was Brother Prosser, it might have been, because we talked with him a lot about this right after it happened so on down his home when I preached in Florence one Sunday. Brother Prosser, I expect, is the one who said that. He said that during that night session, Brother Witt, in which they finally got Brother Hardeman, the fact is they started in the idea of just continuing it, holding him and staying there with it till he broke down enough to do what they were asking him to do. Now that was the attitude the board had to come to.
Right.
Now, that's correct. That's what they had to do.
That's the third meeting you're talking about.
Yeah, the third meeting I'm talking about now, and that's what this comment is about there. One of the board, and I kind of think it was Brother Prosser, told us that a number of times the board during that night reached an agreement with Brother Hardiman only before the board and so on. And but right toward the end of it, when he'd say, yes, that I believe I'll do that, that suits me, I'll agree to this that the board has recommended or something like that. But I won't just a little more time to think it over. And he'd go down to his office and stay down there a little while. And although I don't think this board member ever said, but I know he implied that he went down there to talk to Marinell and maybe two or three others that might have been supporting him. I don't know who, anyway. And he'd come back and say, well, after I've had some time to think that over, I just don't believe I agree to it. And now that's a member of the board told us that.
Who were these key advisors you were talking about that you didn't have access to at this time?
L.L. Briggins was one who died just about a month before this started.
Before this happened.
L.L. Briggins, who had helped Brother Hardiman so many things, and been a great and sound advisor in most all things. The other was J.G. Hardiman, Robert Hardiman's father here, yes. Father Ms. Rainey, and so on. Whom Brother N.B. treasured as a great, successful businessman and a wonderful man of wonderful judgment and everything that kind. And he'd condemned N.B. on a lot of his practices, and had he been living, he would have, what they call it, roast. Had he been living, Jap Hardiman would have roasted him for doing that in chapel.
Yeah.
Well,
and they're the two men I referred to.
Was Brother Hardiman, let me put it this way, was he in the character that inevitably was tied up in his previous conduct? In other words, was this the end of the trail of what had been going on for several years and the stubbornness and I'm always right about this and I'm going to have my way, and no matter what, I'll be the fellow that makes the decision. These last two or three sessions here, the chapel thing, the board actions, were these all further steps in the same direction that he'd been going for years?
Well, they had a bearing. That those very things had a bearing. First is the philosophy of education, so on, under which he had grown up, been reared, and commenced practicing in the early days of school. Everything had changed, so that methods that he once used couldn't any longer be used. But he hadn't realized.
He had primarily run the school, though, and made his decision.
Yeah,
the board just
simply
took the hand in.
That's
what he's asking about.
That's correct.
And that's what he figured would go on during
that's
after
correct.
This started. That
that's
steer
right.
back him in what he did.
And he was he would come down finally. He was rather arbitrary. And pushed his point very strongly of opposition and hard to get to see your point of view in many things. And many times when he did see it, he'd agree to it and then wouldn't do it. That happened with me a number of times.
One incident that Brother Gus Nichols told me occurred in a football game, I think around Thanksgiving time, that he said indicated to him that the thing was in bad condition. A group of boys, of course, were playing, and in the stands, a boy was sitting with a girlfriend, and someone made a good play or pass or whatever, and the boy reached over and touched this girl on the shoulder and said, boy, that was great. And Brother Hardiman saw it and said, young man, you are dismissed. You are out of order.
He got to that kind of conduct, though, although he'd been radical in discipline matters, but that last year he did a number of things, that of which that's just one, and some much worse than that as the background that we're in the student body.
Right. This is the kind of thing Brother that, Nichols was saying.
Okay.
Must have.
Well, he was worse that last.
Basketball, though.
He did basketball.
Yeah, basketball.
I see.
But also the student body had in their memory a thing that couldn't be whacked out, that earlier in the year that a couple of three, four. Well, took two girls out of the dormitory, which is
four girls and four boys.
Okay, four girls and four boys. Okay.
Right.
Out of the dormitory, which is contrary to the rules at that time, and they should have been disciplined.
Right.
But the way it was done, Brother Hardeman, without carrying it through any process, scarcely at all, or advice or anything else, just took it in his own hands and expelled them all.
Expelled the four boys.
Four boys. Expelled
the girls on special probation because school was out, couldn't have any more dates, and denounced all of them in chapel.
And implied at chapel one morning.
One of the girls that might kill herself.
Well,
said,
I thought it was worse than that. That one
said,
of them might be pregnant as a result of their taking an automobile and going up to Jackson.
But the climax that he said, a girl to slip out of the dormitory and meet young men will do anything, and you boys know what I'm talking about. Said that.
Now that was in
that
the student
That was just a month before this all happened.
That was in that student body.
And that set the marriage boys here on fire. They just
Brother Hardeman saying and acting insensible. In
so
chapel,
been
public.
Built up.
That's
just,
correct.
Just
now
that's reprimanding the fellow in chapel.
That's correct, and I have that idea in these notes previous to 1950.
Sending the boy home for putting crackers in the bed, and shorts eating, and with salt, and he'd taken two or three things out of the cafeteria they found in his room to do some pranks.
It was a build-up.
Denounced him in chapel and
but
said he was nothing but a baby.
That year, it got terribly, terribly worse.
Crushed that fellow and says, you can pack up your thing and leave and go home. He came out crying. He said, Brother Whit, do you think I'm all that bad? I said, no, I don't, Johnny. I said, I think you made some mistakes. He was crushed.
Oh, yeah.
And that of course, that got through the students.
There was no, as Brother Hall brings out pretty good all the way through there, it got to the point that there's no practice of Christian.
Did he, Brother Hardeman ever relent on any of these things that that once he dismissed the student, if it was investigated, then?
No, he didn't relent. That is final. That's what he said a while ago.
He couldn't.
No.
He couldn't. You don't own this power.
That's right.
My wife had been telling me for years, said this thing's going to blow up.
She had
someday.
Become his principal advisor, just like I said a while ago, over the
last
year.
There was the power behind the throne. There was the power. He got that state of mind and all. Somebody had to help advise him. He got the wrong advice.
Was his wife, and that's the second wife, was she able to influence him?
No.
Not
she
any
stayed
all.
Out of him, just background all.
No, his power would have eaten her up.
We have a vast amount of knowledge now, and I want to thank all of you for being here. Also, I want to thank Brother Woodson of the Bible Department that he has been here with us.
I'm happy
and
Brother Woodson could come, and because I said, I want to, I'll never sit down and write this history.
I recognize the sensitivity of what you've discussed. I also recognize that it's difficult for you to relive a very unpleasant, unhappy experience. But whoever writes the history, you, Brother Roland and Brother Witt, are the only living links.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I know.
That go back to these days.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, whoever reads them must be responsible.
Well, I'm trying to speak the truth as best
that.
I remember it and know it. And yeah.
Well, thank you, Brother Roland.
Well,
and the rest of you.
Glad. I'm thankful that I've come back from the roughest year of our lives last year. Everything threatened to move me out of the stage of action last year. Three. Worst any of the 60 years we've lived together.